Do you ever catch yourself saying something and think, wait, where did that even come from? Like, that wasn't me. That was maybe my dad, or that podcast I listened to at 2 a.m., or that guy on cable news who always sounds like he's one minor inconvenience away from shouting into the void. Yeah, that's what I want to talk about for a second. Because when we're kids, we don't think about how we're learning. We're just kind of absorbing. Like little sponges, no one warned about the emotional consequences of soaking up their environment. We watch our parents, teachers, that one slightly too blunt neighbor, and without realizing it, we start picking up everything. How to talk, how to react, how to hide a feeling, how to ask for help, or not. And we think that stops when we become adults. But honestly, it doesn't. We're still learning, still picking up cues. Only now, it's not so much from parental figures and wise mentors. Now it's talk show hosts yelling over someone, political commentators telling us what's really going on, or true crime podcasts that somehow make murder the soundtrack to folding laundry. And let's not forget the social media doom scroll. You know, the hypnotic loop of news panic, bad takes, and the occasional cat falling off the counter. All of that, it shapes us. It shapes the tone we use when we talk to each other. It impacts how we discuss life, politics, big ideas, or how we avoid talking about them entirely because it feels too charged, too chaotic, too... ugh. So we stay quiet, or sarcastic, or we just make a joke and pivot to, have you seen the bear yet? And look, I'm not here to shame anyone for doom scrolling or binging commentary, but we're all swimming in the same digital soup. It's worth asking, what are we learning? And who are we learning from? Because just like we picked up our earliest social habits from the people we trusted, we're still doing that now, from the voices we spend the most time with. Even if these voices are coming through a screen. So maybe the challenge isn't just to consume less, but to pay attention to how it's shaping us, what it's teaching us about how to speak, how to listen, and how to be with each other, even when we disagree. You know, one thing I hear a lot, and honestly feel a lot myself, is that it's really hard to have a good faith conversation about something like politics or religion these days, or climate change, or, you know, whether or not oat milk is actually good. Hey! The moment you dip your toe into anything remotely polarizing, it's like everyone's suddenly suited up for battle. And I get it. I really do. It's exhausting trying to navigate a conversation where both sides are low-key just waiting for the moment they can deliver the zinger they rehearsed in the shower that morning. Nobody's actually listening. We're all just quietly building up our counterpoint like a passive-aggressive game of Jenga. But here's a thought. What if we unlearned a bit of that? What if we recognize that so much of the way we engage, especially when things get tense, is something we picked up from our screens? The talk shows, the shout fest, the comment sections that feel like verbal cage matches. It's no wonder we struggle to have real dialogue when most of what we've seen modeled is either performative or flat out aggressive. What if we did it differently? What if? Instead of trying to win an argument, we taught ourselves how to ask better questions. Not loaded ones. Not trap doors disguised as curiosity. But real questions. The kind that comes from wanting to understand, even if we completely disagree. What if we listened? not to debate, but to learn something about how the other person sees the world. Even if we walk away thinking, yeah, still not buying what you're selling, maybe they walk away thinking, huh, at least they heard me. And that's something. Because if there's anything I've learned, it's that no one's ever changed their mind mid-argument while being talked over or talked down to. All that does is puff up our ego and leave the other person more entrenched than before. Which, okay, brings me straight to Carl Rogers. Because if anyone understood the art of listening, not just passively, but relationally, it was him. So yeah, let's talk about Carl Rogers. Real mellow guy, soft-spoken, deep thinker. Looked like your favorite philosophy professor who also gives really solid life advice at the end of class. He was a psychologist in the mid-1900s who pretty much broke up with both Freud and behaviorism at the same time. Bold move. You know, for a guy who basically built his whole theory on listening really well, Carl Rogers ended up saying some of the most profound things about what it means to be human. Empathy, unconditional positive regard, active listening. These aren't just therapy buzzwords that you toss into a TED Talk to sound evolved. These are real, lived practices. And Rogers didn't just influence therapy. He rewired how we think about human connection without ever needing to raise his voice or tweet aggressively. Rogers wasn't about winning arguments. He wasn't about clever rebuttals or psychological sleight of hand. His entire approach was built around this deep belief that the foundation of change, growth, healing, even understanding, comes from those three things I mentioned earlier: empathy, unconditional positive regard, and congruence. That's it. No 10-step formula, no flowchart. Instead of seeing people as bundles of repressed urges or Pavlovian robots waiting for their next dog treat, Rogers asked, what if people need a safe space to be heard so they can figure things out on their own? Revolutionary idea at the time. Still kind of revolutionary now, if we're being honest. And from that idea came what we now call person-centered therapy, which is exactly what it sounds like. Therapy that centers on the person. Wild, right? But here's where it gets cool. Rogers built this whole approach around three deceptively simple ingredients. Unconditional positive regard, which is basically, hey, I accept you as you are. No performance required. Not in a cheesy, you do you kind of way, but in a deep, I'm not going to judge you while you work through your stuff kind of way. It's like emotional Wi-Fi, always on, always available, and no password needed. The second is empathy. Not, oh wow, that must be hard, while you're texting under the table. Real empathy. Getting into someone else's experience with enough presence that they feel felt. It's less, I know how you feel, and more, I'm here with you. Like emotional scuba diving. You've got to go down to the depth, not just wave from the boat. And the third principle, congruence, or also known as genuineness. This one's underrated. Congruence means being real. It's the therapist showing up as a full human, not a robot nodding every 12 seconds. It's saying what you actually think and feel in a way that invites honesty back. Basically, no therapist voice, just you being you. Put those three together, and what you get is an environment where people feel safe enough to actually grow. Because Rogers believed that growth is natural, like plants leaning towards sunlight. You don't need to micromanage it, you just need to create the right conditions. Now, here's where we bring it back to us. Because even if you're not sitting on a therapy couch or holding a clipboard, Rogers' ideas are completely usable in real life. In fact, they're desperately needed. Think about a meeting where someone actually listens to you without interrupting or formulating their counterpoint in their head, like it's a debate. Or imagine a conflict where the other person is honest and kind. Or a conversation where you don't feel like you're being low-key evaluated like a contestant on a very passive-aggressive reality show. And look, I know it sounds simple, but if you've ever tried to do it in a heated conversation, you know how hard it actually is. To set aside your agenda, to stay curious, to not jump in with, yeah, but, or the, well, actually. Just be real, be present, and actually care about what the other person is experiencing. Rogers believed that this kind of presence wasn't just for therapy rooms. It's for life, for relationships, for politics, for family dinners that go off the rails. Because when someone feels truly heard, even if nothing gets resolved in the moment, they're more likely to stay open, to stay in the conversation. And maybe that's the real win. Not providing your point, not scoring intellectual points, but staying connected, even when you don't agree. That's Rogers in action. Active listening, the real kind, is honestly kind of a superpower. And when paired with empathy and a little congruence, you stop having conversations that feel like duels and start having ones that feel like a dance. Awkward at times, sure, but at least you're moving in rhythm with someone else. Whether you're managing a team, raising a kid, talking to your partner, or just trying to get through small talk at a party without screaming internally, Rogers gives us a roadmap. Be present, be kind, be real. So if you're wondering where to start there, with listening. Not perfectly, not performatively, but with a little more Rogers in your pocket. And yeah, it's easier said than done. But maybe next time you're in a conversation, before you jump in to fix, advise, or correct, you just listen. Really listen. Create some space and offer the emotional Wi-Fi. Because Carl Rogers was onto something. People don't need to be pushed as much as they need to be heard. And when they feel heard, that's when the good stuff starts to happen. So, as we wrap all this up, here's what I'm still holding on to. The way we speak to one another matters, but maybe more importantly, the way we listen matters even more. In a world that often rewards the loudest voice, the quickest comeback, or the strongest take, it can feel radical, almost countercultural, to lead with empathy, to ask questions, not to prove a point. But to truly understand. To offer grace in our conversations, not because someone's earned it, but because that's what Jesus models for us daily. Carl Rogers, with all his psychology and therapeutic insight, somehow landed right where the gospel lands. Transformation happens in relationship, not through coercion or cleverness or abrasiveness, but through presence, compassion, and authenticity. He calls it congruence. We might just call it being honest and spirit-led. So whether you're navigating a tough conversation, trying to love someone who sees the world wildly different from you, or just learning how to quiet your own inner voice long enough to really hear another. Remember, active listening isn't weakness. It's discipleship. It's peacemaking. And it's powerful. Because when we show up with empathy, with a willingness to collaborate, not dominate, we make space for the Holy Spirit to do what only the Spirit can do: soften hearts, build bridges, and grow something new. Let's be people who communicate like Jesus, full of truth, yes, but never without grace.